Excited to be here. Thank you.
I'm Griffin Boyce. I'm a censorship researcher at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society. I also occasionally hack on sex and things of that nature.
Wonderful. Yeah, hello. My name is Johannes Grenzfurtner, long and complicated. I'm an Austrian, so I speak German, so bear with my accent. So I'm part of an arts and technology group called Monochrome. I've been coming to Hope for many, many years, actually since 2006, I remember. And one of the things I'm doing is an annual conference about sex and technology called Ars Electronica. And we have two veterans here, Griffith and Kit.
I think, didn't we meet? Yeah, we met at Ars.
More than 5 years ago now at Ars Electronica.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm very happy that doing that conference and I can connect really interesting, cool people. And here at Hope, I did two things. So first of all, I just finished a documentary called Traceroute.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. It was like, I cannot believe that I did that. It's like a two-hour documentary, and I did it for $10,000. And
wow.
It's just like a lot of work, but I'm very proud of it. And so it's about nerd culture. And it's a very personal story about myself growing up as a nerd. And that's, of course, also related to sex and gender. And it's also a story, a road trip through the U.S., going to all the different locations and also people that kind of like inspired me or shaped me in being a nerd, and also talking to other people about what they think that nerd culture could be. And I did an interview with Dr. Kit for the documentary, and we screened that 2 days ago. And yesterday I gave a talk about narration, pretty much. So it's kind of like storytelling for hackers, because I think that hackers are really bad in telling stories.
I agree.
But most of the time, they're completely incomprehensible. I think that especially if you consider yourself a political person and someone who wants to do something, change the world, you have to have a coherent narration that you're presenting to the world, I think. And I was kind of like ranting about that yesterday.
Yeah. Quick aside on that. What's really funny is I currently live with an awesome hacker roommate named Jack, and the funny thing. So Jack has made his own version of Arch Linux called Ninja OS. It's a complete OS distribution model. Does a lot of amazing features, a lot of both privacy and hacking features, completely for free in Arch Linux. And the funny thing is that everyone keeps asking, like, what do you need help with? And one of the big things about that is that he's just go through my blog and go through the setup FAQ, because I was born and raised English, but I am terrible at it, and make it so that it sounds like conversational English between two actual live human beings that have actually managed to do conversation with each other. So I think that's honestly like an actual like big stuff. So I'm glad that you got to cover that and enlighten people with like the narrative of storytelling, which is what we try to do at Radio Statler when we're not screwing things up. So if anyone hasn't guessed, I called this, now unfortunately I named the thing before I got consensus here, so if there's one thing without consent that happened, it would be this, and I apologize greatly in advance for. And I called it the, oh wow, I was really drunk that night. I called it the Own the Wetware Ports. Hacking sex and gender.
Sure. Sure.
That's all?
It I think works. That works.
Sounds like a really bad cyberpunk novel from 92. Yeah.
like that folder like in William Gibson's like computer where that's his like own fan fiction of his own universe.
It's more like John Shirley.
Yeah.
John Shirley.
Yeah.
Well, at least it sounds better than Dryware Ports. Sounds very, too much friction.
Yeah. Oh, and too speaking, much friction. We have another person. We're asking for you.
Hey. Yay.
Hello.
The princess decided to show up from her slumber.
It's a wonderful, another Ars Electronica veteran.
Yes.
And actually keynote speaker.
Yes.
Hello. This is Genevieve. Fresh from more random things that need to be done.
From the scale of 10 to fuck, how many plants am I holding up right now?
E to the pi.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
blue would also be a good answer.
Yay.
So, I guess getting started with sort of stuff now, a big background on me, this is something that I'm actually shocked of. Like, for me, when it comes to, like, my own, like, well, one is a big difference between like your sexuality and what you identify gender-wise. So I just want to lie this flat here, because I'm not one of those people. It's not like a preference thing, but I just don't often introduce, like, you know, hi, my name's Side Pocket, and like, bam, like, I don't even do that with video games. Like, hi, I'm Side Pocket, I only play Call of Duty. Like, I never just do that out of conversation. It's just like things would naturally show up. But if I wanted to pre-state stuff here, it's stuff that I don't actually usually talk about, is that I consider myself pansexual. I've had issues with it in the past, because a lot of people, when you say pansexual, they don't know if you have a fetish for cookware or for the god Pan, like,
oh,
in Greek.
Oh, I haven't gotten
I've,
that
I've had
one.
A couple of those.
My understanding is that Pan is totally
that's
DTF.
That's kind of kinky.
Yeah. So I've had this debate where sometimes I just give up and I just say bisexual, because that's just like the term, even though it does not match. But it's just, there's some people, they start getting lost.
I've tried
to describe it.
I've also heard bisexual is like, my kind of understanding of current meanings of bisexual, folks that I hang out with are like, yeah, you know, it's my gender and other genders.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. But yeah, I understand, but
plus,
I identify as pan as well.
Plus also the thing about that, also with identifying, is that, you know, even when you like find your own identifier, you know, everyone has their own shades of different colors and scales and number points, and we're all basically like Pokemon. We're all on Pokemon Go. But that, my other thing about my background, which is this is something I never talk about for some reason, is that I've always identified as male, but by identifying as male, I don't see as male, so I'm masculine. I see as that male, and I have masculine parts. I have masculine things and feelings, and I have feminine things and feelings. And both of those is how I define my own masculinity and like my own identity, without saying, oh, like if I'm like doing too much femmes, like if I'm watching Sailor Moon, that somehow makes me less of that identifier as me self-identifying as male, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a teenage sister who's almost a grown up now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had this kind of conversation, and she's like, a bisexual woman who's a little bit towards the masculine side, but not really.
Yeah.
And so for a while she's like, you know, I don't know about this. It's like, does that make me like genderqueer or what? And I was like, you know, if you're a tomboy, or you're just in general not sort of like buying into like the binary masculine
right.
feminine bullshit that society puts on you, like that doesn't necessarily mean that you're trans. You can just be you and just identify the way that you're already identifying. You don't have to adopt a new label for that.
That's a lot eloquent than I would have put it.
To a certain degree, that's why all the stuff about storytelling comes in, because that's how you present yourself to the world and how you want to be represented in the story of your community and in the story of society, I guess.
So that's just like my own background stuff. So I guess the first thing I'm going to bring up here is that's a thing that I think particularly I find in America that's been the issue, is that people have a hard time separating the gender identity, whether it's visual or the one that, you know, you find within yourself, and like your sexual preference. And so I was wanting to like go around, and because since we're all going to be talking about essentially embarrassing stories here, with most of them coming from me, is that if anyone could talk about that sort of like, you know, that sort of relation between your gender identity and your sexual orientation, and like you identifying with it, but then how the public perceives, like, do you, where are the conflicts in that? Does anyone have any stories about encounters like that?
One of the harder things about being trans feminine is that there are a lot of assumptions that are made about being trans feminine that have been built up. I mean, for instance, up until relatively recently, there were a set of assumptions that one needed to meet in order to even get therapy to be able to deal with this. You have to be extremely hyper feminine in order to access care. Which, generally speaking, I'm not. I mean, yes, I mean, anyone that sees me this weekend will see me dress a certain way. The reason why is because dressing in white is a great way to move through a crowd that typically wears dark colors.
And it's hot outside, it's balls.
And it is extremely hot out there. So yes, I am going to take advantage of wardrobe options.
Yes.
but generally speaking, I'm going to wear jeans and a t-shirt. You have to be attracted to masculine folks, and most of the time I'm not. There's this entire checklist of things, and there's additional perceptions that trans feminine folks end up as sex workers, or that we're trying to deceive people. I'm not nearly that good. I've tried to deceive people. No one wants to pay me, and two,
To balance that off is that I apparently I'm a trap, and I don't even try. I don't know how that works. I think it's just the amount of substances going throughout the con have warped and have probably improved people's perceptions of things, time, space, and colors from last night.
You are very stubbly, so I don't know. It's like if they kiss you, they would know immediately. Oh, baby, you need to get waxed.
Yeah.
You're a good-looking
guy.
That might
turn them on. That's the, you know, you never know. Yeah, that might be their thing, you know?
I'm surprised you weren't in Cleveland this weekend trying to make a few bucks off of some repressed Republicans.
No, because everyone else is doing that, so the value scale in the market, you know, because we're a capitalist society.
The $20 blowjobs become like $15 blowjobs. It's all over after that.
Going off of that, though, yeah, with assumptions, and then I want to go into something that I think we all have definitely an opinion on. One that the thing's pet peeve of mine, huge, is that I have a friend who, and she tries to explain this when she can, is that for no reason was born with male features, realized that I'm a she way like late, because she gets jealous that a lot of there's a lot of people now, there's like they figure out like around middle of puberty, and so a lot of people like even before that, like when they're six up, she didn't realize that until she was like 17, 18. And so that's been like a wrestling with her, but she'll explain that's that, and so she made it to make sure that she's outside the way she is inside, but that she's attracted to women. And so the thing that I hate the most, because you know people, we like to like simplify things, is like, so she was a dude who then became a woman, but she likes other chicks. So, like, why did she transition if that's what she wanted with other chicks?
That's a surprisingly common statement. A friend of mine who's maybe, like, 10 or 15 years older than me, she transitioned at, like, 17, 18.
Yeah.
And at her first appointment, they actually sent her away because they were like, one, why are you dating a woman? And two, you showed up here in jeans and you want us to take you seriously as a woman when you're wearing jeans? It's like 1989.
Wow. And I would wager that the person that said that thing was themselves wearing jeans, or at least like slacks.
And never mind that women were burning bras to wear jeans.
I mean,
and it's like, now we do this? Like, what the heck?
I mean, it's amazing. Like, it's like, you want to be female. So here's a whole stack of stereotypes of femininity.
Stereotypes against humanity.
Yeah, stereotypes against humanity. The new card game.
So it's almost like a green card interview. You have to get all the check marks.
You got to get your story straight before you show up, basically.
Yeah. Yes.
It's definitely different than a lot of other, like, with diabetes, they're not like, listen, we're on to you. We know you got Cheetos under your pillow at night. It's like, you know, they're just trying to grill.
Trust
you.
Me, I work in pharmacy. They want to do that. They don't, but yeah.
As like the only non-American here, my question would be, all the debate about like transitioning and stuff like that, how is this like tied into the whole debate about the completely fucked up healthcare system here?
Oh,
like,
boy.
Here's a good...
Can you tell me what's the story behind there?
Well, I think that like the you and I maybe have like different experiences, but at least there's typically like long wait lists. So I recently moved from DC to Boston. And that meant that either I could wait 6 months on a waiting list with no medical treatment in between, or I could buy drugs off the internet, and I chose the latter, and it was very fast. Also, I got a discount because I use Bitcoin. So
nice.
Really?
Yeah. 20% discount's pretty good. And so in DC, though, I evaded the six-month waiting list just because there's so many patients and so few providers who are willing to work with trans people. And I got around that by visiting a doctor who charges $1,000 per appointment. And they want to see you every 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
So it's definitely like an interesting like dichotomy. And if you're in a position where you're making minimum wage, or you're in school or something like that, as a lot of trans people are, it's just not workable. So people do like resort to buying their medicine off the internet, and that can have like follow-on complications.
Did you want to add to that? Or? Okay. Long story short, from my end, because like I said, I do work in a pharmacy and I have to deal with different companies' insurance stuff. Essentially, is that pharmaceutical manufacturers, not the pharmacies usually themselves, but the manufacturers of the drugs and the prescribers of them, like money.
Yeah.
And they want to make money.
Oh, sure.
that's
you know,
like the basic, which is why the idea of, hey, you could potentially use an open source platform to make your own estrogen scares the shit out of them.
Yeah. Of course.
Just the idea, even though it might be just like, I don't know, maybe like 5-10 years down, just the inkling, the idea from that freaks them the fuck out.
Yeah, hormone therapy, at least in terms of like estrogen and testosterone, all of this stuff was patented in like the 50s, so it's all out of patent, but it's all still ridiculously expensive because either you're in menopause, you're an old man, or you're trans, and these are all groups that people are totally happy to try to make extra money off of.
Yes. So I guess to the next question, because I think definitely everyone has answered. So, and this is one of those like weird, like I'm going to be like, you know, off the hook, blah, blah, blah. What is it about the hackers and the hacker community and like gender identity and expression? Like, I noticed there's a lot of like, you know, crossing over onto things and, you know, physically, mentally, experiences. Like, what is it about the hacker community that brings this sort of like cross thing of people, just particularly with gender and sexual orientation, out?
I mean, I have to say, it's getting way better. I mean, I've been here since 2006, and in 2006, it was like it was a desert. I mean, I remember that a friend of mine, Rolly,
like also
part
right
of
now.
Rolly, who is also part of Monochrome, he was here with me, and I think it was that Hope in 2006 was his only hacker conference he ever went to, and he never wants to go to a hacker conference ever again.
Aww.
I feel so really bad.
Something about like he got a really bad vibe from the 2006 Hope. I actually didn't get it. I thought like it's a really interesting community. It needs work. It needs a lot of work. But like seeing it like now in 2016, the 10 years show. So you see that there has been a lot of debate. We're not at the end of anything that. So no, of course not.
Yeah. I think like all of us have like a pretty like long history in like in hacking in general. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
well, I've been coming to Hope since 2000, and basically, and yes, this is almost hyperbolic, but it's the perception I got, and because I pretty much saw everyone in 2000, and at every conference since 2000, it was pretty much a sea of almost exclusively white, almost exclusively male individuals that came to the conference. And as the years have progressed, the sea of gender has become more diverse, the sea of age has become more diverse, the sea of ethnicity needs a lot of work still.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty white.
That could be a Statler talk in of itself. I'm probably going to do that next year.
Also, I think
the whole Afro crew.
I think the critical discourse about the hacker community itself, I think it shifted. Because in the beginning, it was more like, it's us against everyone out there.
Yeah.
And it created this like strange of like, we're the hacker community and everything we're doing is right. And we're good. And at one point, people realized, no, it's just like, it's not, no, it doesn't work like the we against us. Us against them dichotomy doesn't really work. There are massive problems within the hacker community. And it starts here and it ends there. and there's, like, even like seeing the talks at Hope, there are way more talks, for example, at this Hope, that are very critical about what's going on. And I like that.
I mean, this is only my second Hope.
Mm-hmm.
So the Hope 2 years ago was my first Hope, and I was going to be giving this talk on being a sex geek, and I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified because, you know, I hadn't been to Hope before. I have a lot of friends who have gone to Hopes and enjoyed them. But I... Basically, I expected it to... I was prepared for it to be a bunch of internet comment section. Like, that was what I was ready for. It was a bunch of cishet dudes as an internet comment section. And I went, and it was certainly the most gender... I was definitely in a gender minority, which was more severe than any minority I'd ever been in, even in an academia robotics conferences, which is saying something. But it actually, I unfortunately had friends who had some bad experiences that last Hope, generally I had a pretty good experience this year. Even just between last Hope and this Hope, I can tell the difference. I feel like I am seeing a few more people of color. Queer as Hope was out this year. Yes. I'm so thankful for them. Shout out to them.
Unfortunately, I was doing so much work at Radio Satellite that I think I popped in for like 10 seconds. I feel really bad.
But no, that was really great. For me, what was interesting about those is I still would like to see more sort of femme-presenting type folk, even within that space. But I can definitely even tell a difference between 2 years ago and now. And that's encouraging.
It's also like not always obvious, like who's gay, who's straight. There's a lot of people here that I know are trans, but they're, you know, they don't like they pass perfectly well, so you can't really tell they're trans if you just see them. So it's kind of like visibility is
passing
kind of, like,
alone
tricky.
Is its own like crazy psychological like mind trip where
I
don't have enough LSD to even start to go down the logic patterns,
yeah,
or illogic patterns, I should say, of that whole slippery slope. So, I guess the next thing, so because I would like to hear more about this, so like I said, we've had people had talks. Stubbs had a talk about hacking sex toys.
Yep, hacking sex, the concept and the stuff.
Was it programming, hardware, like?
Well, so first we did a little bit about broadening our definition of what we think of as sex.
I'm going to make a joke right now.
Because I think, you know, most people, when they hear the word sex, they're like, penis and vagina, intercourse. And I'm like, hey, let's talk about why that's problematic and what other stuff we might want to include. And so we talked a little bit about that. And then we got into, I talked to them about crowdfunded sex toys, about 3D printing and making toys from
right.
that, because that's always a popular topic. And we talked about working with silicone.
Like the Zildos?
No, what now?
The Zildos? You never heard of that from Compile?
No.
From Compile.io, that they were doing like these like the most simplest, cheapest way to like just make like what would technically be called a dildo. So it's like it was like this quick like microcontroller thing that then they like, I think, encased it into something, and then like, you know, like the way you make candles where you keep dipping it in until it just keeps forming
yeah.
it. And
sure.
you would just make these.
How
yeah.
How is that called? Because I know that technique, but how is it called?
They called it Zildos.
As
zero amount, like instead of like money, like the cheapest thing.
Oh,
I like, think it costs like barely a dollar
yeah.
to make
nice.
Each one.
Oh, that's great.
Yes.
That's really funny. You had me at microcontroller, honestly.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also love that this, we're talking about like dildo shape objects and you go most impressive.
Well, look, anytime you can add a microcontroller, as long as it, I don't have to worry about my dildo being hacked remotely.
Yeah, that's
and that's
totally
becoming
a
thing.
Yeah,
we literally
totally
just posted on the 2600 Facebook thing where there's some company, and I love this set of features. You can control the vibration. I can't remember the name of it for the life of me, but it's like you can control the intensity and stuff through your phone manually. It can also sync up to your music playlists on your phone, and it can also sync with other of its own devices so that they play off of each other and they find like equilibrium patterns. And it's
They're
all
jamming.
Bluetooth. Yeah. And like it's a common like Bluetooth thing where if there's not a second layer after that, and where everyone's really curious about that second layer is in terms of after you get through Bluetooth and you get to the custom firmware like stuff.
Well, it makes more dialing a lot more exciting if you're just going through a crowd and trying to set up everybody's secret vibrator or something.
Yeah.
Yay.
You know. And what I'm thinking about is who's the crazy person who just loads up every single song Cam FDM has ever played and is like, okay, I have 6 hours of nothing to do. Go play. You know? Like
this. That's so wrong.
My biggest kink would be like I finally want to have a meaningful conversation with my butt plug.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for that. I'll give it another 10 years and then it,
no,
then
you don't have to wait
to
now
fine.
Because we basically have that right now with the Radio Statler chat. If anyone has any real questions to ask, you could totally actually ask them now because I would be repeating stuff, but essentially, let's put it this way, all the people who gave up trying to harp on Ghostbusters is in our chat right now. As is someone who didn't really like the new remake, personally.
I have
but
not
yeah.
seen it yet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I saw on IMDb, they have the statistics, because people are voting, and the IMDb ratings for the new Ghostbusters are really bad. They're like, it's like under 4 or something like that on IMDb. But the gender dynamic is interesting, because the male vote is very low, like around 3 of 10, mm-hmm. and the female vote is around 7 or 8 of 10. Mm-hmm. And together it comes up to something like a median of 4 or something like that. Yeah. And it's interesting that something like a cultural product like Ghostbusters could generate such an interesting like gender war.
Something to consider is also that... Keep in mind that in the new Ghostbusters movie, it passes the Bechdel test because you've got multiple female characters that don't just talk about a male character. You've got the Mata Hari test, where you cannot just remove a key female character and replace it with a sexy lamp and have a plot continue to make sense.
Nice.
And it passes the Furiosa test, which is apparently it makes the men's angry.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, I haven't heard of the Furiosa test. I will definitely keep this in mind.
Yes, that's good.
So everyone's already making plans already. So
yeah, and I definitely want to watch it.
I will say this for my background on this. One of my main, and this actually ties into a hack related thing, believe it or not. One of my main things, just personally for me, about the new Ghostbusters, like I said, there's definitely good ideas in it. I didn't think my whole thing with anything is execution. It's just, for me, could have been a lot better. But like, one of the things that really bugged me was the whole Sony leaked emails, and in those emails was actually the conversations about like, what should we do with Ghostbusters? And there's all sorts of drama stuff behind there. But one email that really stuck out was like, there was another email where they're like, okay, like there was 3 different producers. Fig, I think, just got on, and Amy, of course, is still doing her thing as executive. And they're like, okay, we want to do this a full reboot. How can we like visually show, besides art design, that this is not the same universe? Like, do we set in a different time period or do what? And they were like, well, the originals were all 4 male, so why don't we just switch them to female, just to make it different? And the thing about that is that there's a good way of looking at it, but like my feeling about that is that sort of like, it's like, okay, like, you know, was there any like, we like cast stuff like, for one of the things like about Star Wars is, for example, with Rey, where like they tested different things and they were just looking for male or male and female, and they had one female role. And if you see the old concept arts for Finn, he wasn't even named Finn, it was all like stereotypical white male, and then they did John Boyega, and they were so impressed that that's like, that's what I like. Or like if there's a plot thing where maybe like someone was like Egon's niece and they decided like we'll bring back the legacy or something. But this was just literally like, you know, how can we just make something, you know, just visibly different? Oh, so they're all originally male. Let's just make them female, just because, like, it's like changing lights from blue to green sort of thing. Like, that was my sort of, base problem that scared me initially.
Ties a little bit into my talk that I gave yesterday about storytelling.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, what you're telling of the whole thing of, like, how can we differentiate the new product from the old product? Okay, let's binary switch it all to female. Yeah. It makes total sense. It sounds like a classic like Hollywood. We have to do something. Oh, let's do this. So it sounds like an executive decision. That
doesn't even sound like a Hollywood idea. That sounds like something from like Madison Avenue. It's like we have to increase market share.
Yeah.
How do we double our profits quickly? Ah. Let's
but Hollywood
pinkify
is
it.
That. Hollywood and Madison Avenue is, it's the same thing.
Same grist mill, different grist.
So my problem is that it wasn't that they were female, because I would have been like equally mad if it was like, okay, like you like The Craft, like how do we make it different? How about we just change the genders from female to male? And it's like the same, like they're boring students, and it's like, it's just sort of like, to me, that's like more of a disservice, because just like now the genders and stuff are like just salad dressing. So instead of like being like, oh, we want to like actually like say a certain message about like women in like Hollywood, like lead role models and stuff, it was just, oh, we just want to do something different.
There's something really interesting, because I've been doing film recently and researching a lot about like plot structures, and there is, if you go, I'm pretty sure it's the same with the new Ghostbusters. If you see a film, films nowadays are written by a very strict formula.
Yeah.
And that formula, you can smell it and you can see it. And you can wait, if the film is like a 90-minute film, you can almost be sure that at the 45-minute mark, something is happening.
Oh, yeah.
The break
action
into two,
beat.
Act two starts and stuff like that. So if you're, there's this really interesting book. I would never use it as a template to write a film or something like that, but it's called Save the Cat. Have you heard of it?
It sounds familiar.
It's called Save the Cat. It's written in the 1990s or something like that by the guy died in the meantime, but he was a famous screenwriter. And he pretty much like created the formula of creating the perfect movie. And all major blockbuster movies you see out there are created by that formula. And it's called Save the Cat because he uses these like tricks, these emotional mechanisms. And I mean, a story is like a movie is an emotional machine, and a good one or a bad one, it doesn't matter, yeah. But if you put that into a formula and you try to make the check marks, okay, did we do the second act move to third act right? Then do we call it you know, like the moment of darkness? And you can see all these spots, and it's called Save the Cat because he says that to establish a protagonist, you need to have good feelings for that protagonist, so that people feel, aha, that's the person you're betting for. That's the person that you like to succeed, and you have to do like an emotional trick so people understand that that is the good person. So that person, for example, in the first 10 minutes could save a cat from a car, and then you do something like that, and that's the Save the Cat moment. Because you need it in the first 10 minutes, you need the Save the Cat moment. And that could be a cat, it could be whatever it is, yeah? Mm-hmm. But you can look for those things. They're almost like bullet points. And sometimes I just like feel cheated because I know that formula. They're like, oh no, not again.
All right, so I was about to text myself the name of this book, and now I'm like, no, maybe I do not want to know the magic formula.
Sometimes it kind of ruins some things for you. You know it.
But, well, it's just like any form of like, you know, hacking, you know, doing behind the scenes stuff. Like there's a bit of the magic on, but the key thing is that you can create new magic from it.
But the good thing is, I mean, I like to watch a lot of movies. If a movie is well made, you don't obviously see those points. So if a movie is a good movie, you will not feel it. And if it's a bad movie, it's blatantly staring at you that they did it by that formula.
Yeah,
so
you can, it just hangs there. Yeah, you can like
it's
feel
just like,
that.
It's just like it's awful.
I will acknowledge one thing from IRC chat. For some reason, someone in IRC wants Johannes to say California.
California. But okay, how would I say it? California? California.
They didn't even specify like how you should say California. They just wanted to.
So I have to say,
I think someone's getting off on that.
I'm an Austrian, but I'm a lower Austrian. I'm not from Styria. Schwarzenegger is from Styria, and Styria is the most awful of all Austrian dialects, and nobody likes it. They all sound like barking dogs. Really, it's they really talk like that.
So is that like the German version of Welsh?
Good question, yeah. I always think that Austria is kind of like the Alabama of the German-speaking places because we are very southern, very thick, rural dialect. Like
this went from hacking sex and gender to clan meeting really quick.
Whoa. What?
Really quick. With that killing note, sorry, I just lost track here because I'm like reading the IRC. Hello. Yep, like barking dogs. Stuff today. So, since it's early in the morning, does anyone want to? I'm sorry, I literally just went.
Okay, I'm jumping in.
Yes, thank you. Please, it's gonna come to me in 2 minutes.
What is your favorite innovation or things that you got excited about in terms of sex and technology since the last hope? Let's say the last 2 years.
Only in the last 2 years?
In the last 2 years. Is there something that pops out?
Something that pops out. I mean, a couple of seconds on that.
And if you're too tired, like, I'll ask the whole round.
No. Well, it's actually like the end bit in a series of advancements from one major advancement. It's not really an advancement. It's more of like a rebranding of something, which is simply the idea of the fleshlight. Because the thing is that, and it's a stereotype that I think kills both sides of this, where it's like there's almost like an expectation where if someone is a gendered female, you know, whether it's self-identified or visual, and you end up in the room, it's perfectly fine, and I think it's perfectly fine myself, that just all of a sudden there's a drawer and there's 18 billion dildos in it.
You already know what's in that. Like if you're in a woman's bedroom and she has a nightstand, you already know what's in the nightstand.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's not a copy of.
My favorite is like the ones who are like proud and they have like the 12 inch giant Thor with like the stand on it right there on the dresser.
Next to the family picture. First of all, that is there to intimidate you directly.
Yes.
And also, really, usually only the first few inches of the giant Thor is going to go in anybody.
Right.
Yeah. It's because of the diameters.
Otherwise, it's getting pathological after that.
Like, where does it go?
Sex toys, like actual like devices, and it's always a lot of it's still slanted towards the female, and it's still hard for people to talk about like sex toys, not only the existing applications of those for male, but like stuff that is specifically designed to please male anatomy, physical anatomy.
Just a language thing there. So I when I talk about sex toys and people, I like to try and focus on sort of body parts as opposed to kind of gendered or potentially gendered language. But like, I hear what you mean, right?
Yeah.
There's like not as many cool sex toys for people with penises.
Yeah.
Like that is absolutely true. And actually, I mean, so in the past 2 years, Autoblow 2 was crowdfunded.
Yeah.
So that's like the one that comes to mind. Like I put together.
Can you quickly explain for people who don't know
this is
exactly.
Interesting. So the Autoblow 2, and now they're onto the 2 Plus. I just found out while I was making slides for my talk. So I have bonus slides. I have a whole thing of like
bonus
20 round. Slides of like crowdfunded sex toys basically from 2014 to 2016. And so the Autoblow is basically kind of like a pocket pussy that's inside a larger container that has now 3 rings of beads that roll up and down along kind of the silicone pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So you insert a penis and then you turn it on and it sits there and the beads kind of rub the silicone and so you get this kind of simulated, they're like, it's a blowjob machine. I'm like, okay, you know what?
That sounds amazing.
The GIFs are fabulous. Yeah. I love it for the GIFs alone.
I've seen that where it's like the mechanical, like it's not just like a fleshlight where you have to like manually use it, where it's like automated. And this is how much of a dork I am. When I first saw one of those, I don't know why I thought this. My first thing I came to mind was in the book and in the movie Dune, where in order to test for like the sisterhood, priestesshood, that you had to put your hand in the metal box.
Yeah.
And you have to do the whole mental trial thing or you get poisoned.
It's the pain box.
Yeah, the pain box. That was the first image that came to my head when I saw like the, because it's just like an indescript slot with a box. Like, stick something in there. Fun things might happen. It's just sort of like,
I mean, they're really actual pain box thingies, like the whole electrostim scene.
Yeah.
There is so much great, interesting, weird stuff out there concerning electrostimulation.
Define weird, especially when you're at home.
There's Uncle Abdul. Have you heard of Uncle Abdul? Uncle Abdul, uh-huh. Like, he's doing pretty much like, it's so hard saying it, like citizen science, because I don't like the term citizen, because citizen is just citizen, what is a citizen? But it's kind of like, let's call it open science, like non-academic science, let's call it that way. And so Uncle Abdul is pretty much like a classic bear. Like he lives in the San Francisco Bay Area for like decades, and he's an electrician. And at one point, I think in the 70s or 80s, at some point, he realized that people in the electrostim scene in San Francisco were actually hurting themselves. So they were really electrocuting themselves.
Yeah.
So it's, and he is an electrician. He was an electrician. So he said like, no, you should not, not through the heart. It's like, no. And he began writing down all that stuff, and he wrote a book called Juice. It's Uncle Abdul Juice. And it's a handbook for electric pleasure and how to do electrostimulation right, with all the diagrams. It's a scientific handbook, and he did research like, can you put like 12 volt through your penis for 48 hours, and what would it do? So it's really, he did research and wrote all of that down, and then he brought out this kind of like guidebook for his folks. to not kill themselves and maim themselves. And it's really great.
Speaking of research, I was really excited when I can't remember which company, but there was someone's going to do like a commercial, like aerospace, to do like to film a porn in space. I think was that backed by Pornhub or something.
Somebody did a drone based thing, and basically a drone based porn, and so they videoed it from a drone.
Right.
And so my understanding of the behind the scenes is basically like they would say, "You're on cue," and then they would wait a little bit, and then as it goes down, they're like, "You're on cue now," so it's like, "Go, go, go."
Yeah.
Basically down the line for like a couple of kilometers.
That's one thing the drone was actually going to do that next, but no, about that they were also going to send like two people out into like the just the right part of the atmosphere where it's like technically zero gravity, kind of like the first space test where it was in
So the first time in 1996, there's this Spanish porn production company, which is still one of the biggest on the planet. It's called Private. And Private, they shot a really, really bad, I have to say, really, really bad, like classic cis porn. In 1996, called Project Uranus, of course, and it's a science fiction porn, and they hired one of these, the Vomit Comet, you know, like the parabolic flight planes, where you actually have a couple of minutes of zero gravity. And so in 1996, that was the first time a zero gravity cum shot was actually used in a porn film, and that was as early as 1996, So,
and from what I understand, it was sort of like they wanted to, like that's what the studio was trying to achieve. And what was really funny was apparently what they weren't expecting was that, because they were like trying to get it on Indiegogo to like to do the rest of the funding, and that a lot of the people who were donating in were people who worked at NASA, because their whole thing was like, you could totally do that, and we'll like give, like each as individual employees, we'll give money if we can just send one or two people to go up there and like study research wide, like the long term effects of like sperm and zero gravity and like how that works in the dynamic of sex in space. And
NASA has a completely no sex policy about that kind of stuff. So they're like, if you would ask a NASA spokesperson, has there ever been sex in space or anything like that, it's most likely that someone masturbated in space at one time.
Yeah.
But they are not allowed to talk about it.
There's a complete
no-go. And with the Russians, it's even worse, because the Russians are openly anti-female bodied people. So they would never ever send a female cosmonaut to space.
Yeah.
And that's going back to the 1960s, when one of their early kind of like founding fathers of the Soviet space program had, it seems that he had personally problems with like
women.
With women, yeah. And ever since then, there is kind of like, you can't even try to get into the Russian cosmonaut corps as a woman. No way.
And someone actually brought in here as sort of like a joke on IRC about one of the things about like zero gravity sex, of like our questions would be like, who would be on top?
There's no technically, top,
but that's the thing. And the thing is, I think even with gravity, it's confusing of like who's on top.
The main problem is that you're bouncing off each other.
Yeah,
that's the main problem. There are people who are designing stuff like snuggle tunnels, where you have kind of like a soft fabric thingy that's kind of like hanging from the ceiling or non-ceiling in the space capsule. And so if you bounce off each other when pounding or something like that, you bounce again off from the snuggle tunnel back to your partner. And so it's not easy, no. And there's this new science fiction series called The Expanse or something. Have you seen it?
I think it came out
like a year ago, the first season. I'm not sure the second season is out now. And they have one kind of like zero gravity sex scene in there, and I was looking at it, it's like, bad physics. This is really bad physics. Like, how? Yeah. No.
like video games level crashing type of physics? Like when a video game like completely glitches out type of bad physics?
Yeah, it's just like, no, it would not work. You would need like harnesses or something, or no.
And the thing that like boggles me about it real quick is that like astronauts have to be like, they have a segment where they have to like be working out constantly, or their muscles will atrophy even faster than they normally do in zero G. So it's just sort of like, you would have to like do that experiment and then still the workout. Like, how would they, you know, because it's like, are we technically working out if you're only doing kinetic energy back and forth? Like, how would you know? Because that, you know, I mean, getting from that, it's like, would they, you know, would they count towards that? Would it not, just because, you know, like, you're still working, like, you, if you're working muscle groups or not? Because that's a big thing in space, is that you need to keep developing, like, your muscles in space, or they'll just rapidly start deteriorating.
I wouldn't think that NASA would consider that exercise, because that would be considered, that would probably be considered just recreation.
Yeah.
If they were ever
just like now.
Exactly. I mean, there must be some kind of studies out, I mean, studies, at least, like, on paper, there must be something, because for decades and decades, there are ongoing ideas about, you know, like, multi-generational spaceships and stuff like that. So, I mean, just, as a mere, like, banal idea of, like, kind of, like, you know, like, procreation in the most biological, kind of, like, how do we produce a baby? There must be something out there, but they never talk about it.
Then again, those multi-generational ships would be large enough to have some kind of gravity, either just from the mass or.
Interesting point here, and I'm going to get to this. My favorite thing that I've seen so far in IRC is we've had three posts that says that, and I love this, that right at this talk, that Radio Statler has jumped the shark. Which is amazing, because that's an achievement, because we've had
why?
Everyone playing Cards Against Humanity, whatever the hell it's called, yeah. With 8 million cards out, falling all over each other in here. We've bullshitted for many, many hours, and we are surrounded by penises, drawings of penises, that then Stape came by to try to cover up the art so they would be less obscene, and somehow it made it more obscene, in my opinion, which I think is amazing.
I mean,
that one in particular, but the one with the shorts.
I have to explain that. It's something like a penis with testicles, but there are mushrooms growing on it, and it's like a vagina dentata, but it's a penis, so it's a penis that bites off.
And my favorite thing about Stape is that he tried, I think he was attempting to either draw feet or shoes for the poor guy, and end up accidentally replicating everyone's 7th grade geometry homework on triangles with, like, the circles and, blocking out triangles.
Someone tried to put shoes on the testicles? Yeah, that's...
That would be unpleasant.
And also, if you haven't noticed, thanks to the knock, we have an actual glory hole in here.
Yeah, somebody drilled a hole in the wall right at, like, cock level.
And they spent elaborate amount of time using gaffer and blue painter's tape to make realistically shaped phallic objects to stick through in order to create the hole.
Okay.
And the one that worked was this really short, using black gaffer tape, 4 inches and 1.5 inch thick one. And they ran out, that's when they ran out of gaff tape, so they used the painter tape to make the balls at the end. So I was like, let me get this straight. What you're telling me is that the official mascot for the knock this year is a really short black dick with blue balls.
Incidentally, if you're in the knock and you want to put your dick through, feel free and you'll get a surprise.
Yeah. But interestingly, going back to the question, I'm really interested why people think that our conversation now is in any way like shark worthy, jump shark worthy. But honestly, I get that a lot, because I talk to people about especially sex and technology and gender relations in that context, I mean, I get a lot of, like, people stare at me and think, like, why do you know this? Why are you talking about this? Why is this interesting?
Why did you make a dildo and put LEDs in it?
Yeah.
Does it do anything? What?
It's fun and maybe it's hot.
I mean, humans are sexual and humans are tool making. So, I mean, that's the most basic thing that we are.
Is that purely like a European? Yes. European. Is that something that particularly frustrates, like, people outside, like, America, like Eastern Western Europeans,
because
I see that, and I've grown up born and raised in America.
Because Americans are perceived very, very Puritan or something?
Yeah.
You find that same thing in Europe as well. I mean, there's certain things that are kind of obnoxious, I have to say. I mean that you have, like,
I've ran out of funds, but...
That you have a country like the U.S. still publicly debating stuff like abortion is, of course, like, why it's 2016, why are we even having a public debate about
started on sex education here.
One of the strangest and honestly kind of, like, amazing things is that now in, like, 2016 in America, I know several people who are working in the U.S. and in Western Europe on getting people abortion drugs because they're living in locations where abortion is not available. So this idea that there's an underground system for people to get abortion drugs now, not 1962, is both insane and kind of, you know, it's a sign of the times, I think.
At the same time, you have states where, like, a recreational marijuana is legal, so it's like, I think that the U.S. is an enormously, like, I wouldn't even say psychotic, but it's a very, if I say schizophrenic, that I'm like, I'm ableist or something. No, but
it's,
would you like to inject with something, Cable Flame, on that topic?
Contradictory, perhaps?
Contradictory, yeah.
Very, very two-sided, very...
Jekyll and Hyde, possibly, to like the extreme in certain cases.
On many different levels, because still the U.S. is one of the major innovation producers on the planet. At the same time, there are things that we think like, well, this debate is not even a debate anymore in, I don't know.
Like Germany, the U.K., it's just like, okay, like a certain percentage of people are going to want or need to have abortions.
My own personal opinion about it is like with a lot of other things, like bringing back security, you see this all the time. It's something to talk about so that we don't want to talk about on the real issues because it's hard and it would cost a lot of money. So it's just sort of like, look over here. Like, please don't focus on the fact that we allowed the TSA keys to be taken pictures of and being posted and giant posters all over New York City for everyone to see. Like, don't ignore that. Just, yep. Because unfortunately we're running out of time and we could really go on this forever. I wish this was like a 3-hour talk. Would anyone like to do like any like last comments, or how about this? How about we go around and be like bring back to neutral point, like best like hope experience. Doesn't even have to be like sex or gender. Just like have all the crazy stuff that's happened in your highlights so far. Besides doing this, of course.
Yay! For me, definitely Queer as Hope. That has been great. I am so thankful for the folks that organized it, and I've met so many cool people that way.
The medical devices talk yesterday was completely amazing, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, I think the best time I always have at Hope is just like walking around and bumping into random people and just like starting conversations with people I've never... So also, of course, not people who are necessarily on stage or something like that. Mm-hmm. Just like running into people and having super cool conversations. That's why I really... And that's, I think, why something like a convention will always be such a fundamental, wonderful part of something like the hacker community, because meeting people in physical spaces,
in meat space
is important. There's no debate about that.
I think my favorite part is probably I helped lead a 4-track panel yesterday on hacking spirituality and religion, and we had about 17 people. I think two were just there to sit down with their laptops. That's cool. Everyone just went straight in. There wasn't any hesitance, there wasn't any this. Everyone just started talking straight about things that are deeply intimate, deeply personal, right off the bat. And we really got to, I didn't know how hard it would be to get people to open up and get into it. People were just bam, there. And that just kind of blew me away. It was wonderful.
Wonderful.
For me, it's reuniting with people that I haven't seen in a long time. And, you know, just reconnecting with community like this. Between Hopes, we're all over the country, all over the world, and you know, we gather in this time and place and make this impossible thing happen again.
Since everyone stole mines, I will say this as a hint, though, because we unfortunately are out of time, but you will find out the crazy story of my best moment, which actually happened this morning, and the reasons behind that, I'm going to share a bit back there with that when we close shop today. But I just wanted to really quick extend out to thank you, all of you, so much. Thank you, Kit. Thank you, Johannes. Thank you all for coming out on the... I can't even remember my name right now. Thank you all coming out.
This is
my big last thing. I am so glad you all come out. And enjoy the rest of Hope. And we're going to have another exciting thing coming up. So stay tuned to Radio Statler. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of the con.
Thank you. Yay.